Let's talk about contract extensions. Who on the Pacers is eligible to receive one this offseason? Who makes sense as an extension candidate? Who should the Pacers be looking to extend beyond Tyrese Haliburton, of course? And what do I think will happen? We'll get to it all today on the Locked On Pacers podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and SI, and today we are diving into the lovely land of contract extensions. This is my bridge from Pacers free agency. We talked about all the Pacers players now ahead of their free agency and predictions for who and will and won't be back, to external free agency is the middle part of that, which is extending contracts already on your team. Pacers have been a very savvy extension team under their current regime, at least I think. Miles Turner, of course, with the renegotiation. Malcolm Brogdon got an extension. They rookie extended Sabonis and Miles Turner. I'm sure there's an extension in the middle that I'm missing. They offered them to Vic, and actually that worked out well for them in the end. But either way, they have been an extension team, and they have a lot of guys this summer who are eligible and some who make quite a bit of sense and others who make very little sense. We'll get to all of it today, including who I think should and should not be extended at any point this offseason. So the starting point is we already talked about one of these guys, and that's the only guy who, as you're listening to this, is right this second could sign an extension. That's O'Shea Brissett. And his situation is more unique because he'll be a free agent on July 1st. He is extension eligible on his current contract, but it's very, very rare that a guy coming up on the season, coming up on free agency, signs an extension, lengthens his contract with the team he was just on because they can see the market of other teams. Usually it happens right before the season because then they've kind of figured out what's out there for them in general. You can listen to the whole episode breaking down the pros and cons of that, as well as Brissett's free agency. I believe it came out on April 24th, the exact day anniversary of his initial signing with the Pacers. The gist of that is in that episode, but he could sign a much longer extension up to like $60 million over 4 years. And he's obviously not worth that much, but that's the maximum parameters, but I don't think that happens before free agency. Gary Harris did an extension with the Magic last summer right before free agency, but that was like 2 days before. Robert Covington, a weird one who broke the trend, but usually those sort of things happen right before free agency. Because I already talked about him, I don't want to dive in to too much more detail there. You can just listen to that episode. I'd like to get in to everybody else who I haven't talked about in more detail, and the first one is much more interesting, and that's Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield is extension eligible on July 1st, right this second. He is not, and he is in an interesting spot for an extension because on July 1st, his contract will be entering the final year of the four-year rookie extension he signed with the Sacramento Kings. Actually, he might have been a restricted free agent. I can't remember. Either way, the four-year deal he signed with the Kings begins its last year on July 1. So two things apply to Buddy Hield. One is a new CBA rule, and one is something that happened with Miles Turner last year. The first new CBA rule is, and this is true for every player who is veteran extension eligible, and that is the first year of an extension can now be 140% of a player's prior year salary in the first year. So Buddy Hield's base salary next season is about $18.5 million. So the first year of his extension, including potentially similar bonuses to what he has now, would start at like $26 million maximum. Remember, that's not, it doesn't have to be that much. It can be up to that much. It could be as low as the minimum, but it could be up to that much. And it can be as many as 4 years, adding 4 years to the 1 year he already has for a maximum of 5 years, put in the 8% raises, and that's a maximum standard veteran extension of 4 years, $116.5 million. Remember, that is not, he's not worth that much. Everybody knows that. That is the maximum parameters. It could be 1 year at the minimum. It could be 2 years with $10 million each. Anything that fits in four for 116.5 is legal, as long as the year-to-year raises and stuff is legal. So Hield's really interesting, right? Kevin Pritchard already addressed this one. Dustin Doperic of the Indy Star asked about it at Kevin Pritchard's end of season media availability, and he said, you know, we've got to find the right role for Buddy that makes sense and that we're comfortable with and that he's comfortable with. And if we do, then we'd be comfortable doing it. And I interpret that to mean he's probably going to have a different role next season. If they're happy with how he plays in that role and he's happy with how he plays in that role, perhaps it's something they pursue. But look, Buddy Hield is on the wrong side of 30. He's probably looking for one more bigger contract. Like if it's something to come back to the Pacers in a bench role and the money isn't right, that's maybe not something he would want. I don't know what Buddy Hield wants, to be totally clear. Just thinking about how the cycle of contracts goes for players commonly, you know, he'll be thinking about his role as much as the Pacers will, right? It matters to both sides. And that is also where an extension is really unique here, in that it might make sense for the Pacers. He is, of course, talented. He was second in the league in three-pointers made. He fits very well with Tyrese Halliburton. They're very good friends off the court, which matters a lot, right? He's durable, which the Pacers have desperately needed in recent seasons, right? All these factors suggest, like, yes, the Buddy Hield is good, certainly a good player. Is he the right fit for the Pacers long-term? That's something they'll have to decide. I waffle on that. I think you could say yes or no to that question. But as an excellent shooter in a league where shooting is important and as a great fit with their system, of course, there are reasons to do it. And Buddy Hield is, of course, a good player. Now, what value makes sense for him? You know, Doug McDermott got that 3 for 52, I believe, with the Spurs when he left the Pacers. It might have been more than that. It was like $14 million a year. Buddy Hield's better than Doug McDermott, and the cap has gone up since then. So Buddy Hield's $18.5 million. That kind of sounds right. The amount he's about to make this coming season, at least, sounds good to me. That's like solid starter money. You know, good starter money is the mid to high 20s now. I mean, the cap, people have to keep up with the cap again. It's going to be $200 million in 5 years. So for a player like Buddy Hield, yeah, $18 million seems about right to me. $26 million seems a little rich. That seems like one of the better starters at your position. But, you know, I think that there are parameters that make sense, at least from a value perspective. But the question is, does that value make sense for the Pacers, or would they be better off using that space on something else? Or would they be better using that money on something else, or his role on somebody else? I don't know. These are questions they'll have to answer. And it might even be determined by if they're able to kind of wiggle into the situation that they want of trying to be better next year. If they can't and they feel like they have more rebuilding coming on their two paths timeline, then maybe they're less inclined to keep him. But if they get their team all sorted out and they have everybody in the seats they like and they like where Buddy Hield's role is, maybe they would be inclined to keep him around. But Buddy Hield extension discussion does not stop there, because I mentioned Miles Turner earlier. He would also be eligible for a renegotiation and extension this coming season because he only has 1 year left on his deal. That's fascinating. I don't think that so the extension I just talked about would kick in, you know, with the raises I just described, would kick in 24-25. The renegotiation would bump up his salary in the coming season, 2023-24, and then add seasons onto that. And what they could do is, this is maybe something that would make more sense, is, you know, give him a bump this year up to, like, I'm making this up, but like $25 million. Then if you drop that by 40%, you're looking at like 14, 14, 14 the next 3 years. And then maybe you found a value that makes sense that uses your cap space this year and then gets healed on a more manageable number as he ages. I don't know what the answer with it, any renegotiation, is. It depends on what else they can use their cap space on. And it depends on what their salary situation is maybe after they make some signings or trades, because it could make no sense to fill any salary slot with Buddy Hield. And it could make no sense for them to add money to him this year, but it could make a lot of sense. It could be a good way for them to bump up their salary closer to the floor and then maybe get him for way cheaper or a more reasonable number the next 2 years. Miles Turner is making less than $21 million this coming season and then less than $19 million the following season, right? His contract is fantastic because of that 40% decrease where he made the max this past season. Is there a number that makes sense for Hield? I don't know. I do the parameters for veteran extensions because it's much more concrete what the scenarios would be, right? For Hield, the max is 4 years, $116.5 million, but anything within that is legal. Renegotiations, there's so many permutations that it's impossible to kind of describe what it could look like, and it depends how much cap space the Pacers have and all sorts of negotiated things. But Buddy Hield has a lot of potential ways to be extended that kind of make sense, that I'd be curious to see how the Pacers approach it, what their thinking would be with something like that. But it probably depends on how the rest of their summer goes and what they feel like Hield's role should be this coming season. I think he's a fascinating one to watch, though, and of the veterans, maybe the most likely extension candidate. We'll talk about that at the end. Next segment, two other vets who are extension eligible, but in different ways this summer, and that's TJ McConnell and Daniel Tice. Before we do that, though,
short little break here so I can talk to you about Prize Picks. We're doing a $1 million daily super flex promotion during the NBA playoffs. Every day of the playoffs, one Prize Picks user will get a chance at becoming a millionaire. One entry placed after 8 a.m. every day will be randomly selected. Whoever placed that entry will be given a chance, given a six pick flex. And if you get all six right, $1 million payout. Five will get you 80,000, and four correct picks will get you 16,000. Go to prizepicks.com/million. To learn more, you got to opt in at that link and then just play the game. How does Prize Picks work? You pick a player and will they go over under on their projection for a certain stat? For example, in the finals, will Nikola Jokic have more or less than 27.5 points in a game? You can do that for 2 to 6 players. You can up to 25 times your money. It's not you versus other people. It's just you versus their projections. You can make your picks quickly. It's safe and operational in over 30 states and Canada. So download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com. Sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget, enter the promo code LOCKEDON to sign up for an instant deposit match up to $100 at Prize Picks Daily Fantasy, made easy.
Thank you, as always, for making Locked On Pacers your first listen today and every single day. For your second listen, finals coming up, check out Locked On Nuggets. Get the latest from the Denver guys about that upcoming series. Denver's first finals ever. Can Jokic get it done for that franchise? Really looking forward to the finals. I can't wait. Let's keep talking about Pacers contract extensions. Really, really fun permutations for them, as they've got some guys who are eligible that make sense and some guys that don't. We just went over Buddy Hield. We went over O'Shea Brissett about a month ago, a little over that now. Another one or two veterans to talk about as well as Hield are Daniel Tice and TJ McConnell, who both become extension eligible this summer. We'll start with McConnell. The difference between McConnell and Tice and Hield is McConnell has another year left after this season, as well as Tice, although Tice is a team option. So renegotiations are much more complicated, right? In theory, legal, you could bump up 2 years of money, but that I can't recall that ever happening in NBA history. I'd have to dive really far back. So you could probably rule that out. You can definitely rule it out for Tice, just given the Pacers roster construction. And for McConnell, it's just a little less clear exactly what that would look like for him. So again, they could be renegotiation and extension eligible, but what makes more sense potentially is veteran extensions. McConnell's is interesting because he is a partial guarantee in 2024-25. So any extension for him could not even kick in for 2 years. He just seems like it wouldn't happen with 2 years left on his deal. They could even, you know, cut some of the money 2 years from now. It's partial guaranteed, so you could view him as an expiring, but it's not a team option, so it's not like they can decline it and extend him. We'll get to Tice, which they could do with him if they wanted. Again, I don't think he's an extension candidate, but for McConnell, an extension would kick in 2025-26, but he is eligible again to sign one this summer. So what would that look like? Well, since I messed up a number in my sheet, if you'll excuse me for a second, I have to change some stuff. But in that first season, 2024-25, it could go as high in the first year, given his prior year salary, as $13 million. And the most the full deal would be is 4 years, $58.3 million. Again, that is not what they have to offer him. That is the maximum they could offer him. It could be 3, 2, 1 years. It could be as low as the minimum. It can be as high as those numbers I just detailed. So for TJ McConnell, that would start 2 years from now. Look, 2 years away, extensions do happen sometimes. They're kind of rare. They're not the most common thing. They have to happen before the season starts. So on day one of the coming season, TJ McConnell would no longer be eligible for a will no longer be eligible for a contract extension. Brogdon got extended with multiple years left on his deal. So it does happen, right? But it's very rare. And especially for a team like the Pacers, who are valuing flexibility, especially at McConnell's age compared to the rest of the roster, it might just not make that much sense for this to happen, even though he is a good player that makes sense on the Pacers. Perhaps next year they circle back and say, hey, you still make sense for us. And they'll have to figure out what the right price is with his age, with how the salary cap has jumped up, and with the rest of the team construction, because his role will likely reduce going
forward, right? Andrew Nembhard's going to move into the backup point guard spot. Tyrese Haliburton, of course, has a stranglehold on 32 to 40 minutes every night, depending on how the game is going. So their need for a veteran backup one still exists, but that role is going to go way, way, way down. So as good as McConnell has been for them, that is where the extension conversation kind of ends to me. It's just like, unless he's willing to take a cheapo deal to know he's going to be the third point guard. And again, this is 2025-26 we're talking about. You know, there's no reason for this conversation to happen, especially without knowing how effective he would even be next year. So while as a person and as in theory, a depth piece, maybe like a bridge out of the George Hill depth piece era, like sure, maybe on a cheapo, like $5 million a year at most kind of deal. But it seems like with Nembhard and Haliburton locked up, that's not something the Pacers would pursue, especially because it starts in 2 years and keeping the flexibility makes more sense. And, you know, they could even cut him next year and save some money against the cap. So to remove that flexibility and to lock him up does not seem like something the Pacers would do. And even from McConnell's standpoint, perhaps he could want to sign a 1 year bloated deal then to have a role somewhere. I don't know. It depends on what the landscape of the league is and how his next 2 years go, but it doesn't seem like this is something that makes sense for McConnell or the Pacers right now, even though it is technically going to be possible. Other veteran, Daniel Theis, also veteran extension eligible this summer after signing his contract. Can you believe this? With the Rockets 2 years ago, how times have changed. In Houston, traded last year to the Celtics, then traded in the offseason to the Pacers, obviously. Definitely a wild background for him. His contract is fascinating in this discussion because of something I said earlier, where he's got this team option for next season. Not this coming season. He's already guaranteed at $9.1 million. But for 2024-25, he has a team option at $9.5 million. So, in theory, Daniel Theis is an expiring contract. So this is the same deal with McConnell, where there are ways an extension could start in two different years, right? They could do an extension that starts in 2025-26 and pick up the team option, or they could even decline the team option right now and then extend him and the money would jump up more in 2024-25. Like McConnell, the full raise and max doesn't make sense for Daniel Theis. The max extension right now would be 4 years, $57.1 million. I mean, he's like a $5 to $10 million player, right? His salary right now is just fine. So is McConnell's. So the raise part doesn't make sense. Did the years part make sense? Well, that's the trouble here. Still, no, right? As of right now, it doesn't. With Isaiah Jackson in the mix, with Jalen Smith in the mix, the Pacers don't need to be adding significant money to a center right now. Now, if Theis would accept like a minimum deal, maybe. I mean, depth, veteran, big man are always valuable. The Pacers have typically had one. Al Jefferson, for example, Kyle O'Quinn, for example, even behind their young bigs, they have on occasion had another vet, you know, waiting in the wings, because you never know when you're going to need experience at that position. They even turned to Jakar Sampson over some young bigs in the past. That was a mistake, but that's something that they did. So if, you know, Theis turns out to be a valuable fit for them, maybe this is something they could explore during the season, but they can only explore it during the season if they decline the team option, because if he has 2 years left on his deal, once the season starts, he's not extension eligible. So if something happens and during the season, the Pacers go, wow, Theis is playing great for us, he's a great fit as our backup five, and a lot would have to change, right? For McConnell, nothing can change. It's not like they're going to trade Nembhard or Haliburton. In the backup center spot, things could change in theory, right? There's some question marks about both Jackson and Smith being around long-term. If things change and Theis is playing well, theoretically they could decline his option and then negotiate an extension within the parameters that I just described. So should either of these veterans get one? I don't think so. I mean, I think anyone over 30, given the Pacers' current age of their team, doesn't make a lot of sense to me to lock up long-term, right? It might make more sense for them. If you could see me on YouTube, I just accidentally dropped some trash on my desk, so I was throwing it away. What makes the most sense for veterans? Probably not to be extended until they know their situation more clearly, and they're clearly a team in flux right now. They're trying to decide what their next path should be, as Pritchard described. So I would think that neither of these guys get an extension. In fact, of the five players we'll talk about today, six if you count Brissett, I would put these two as the least likely to get a contract extension this summer, even though there are ways it could make sense. For McConnell, it doesn't make really any sense. And for Theis, it would take a ton of things happening a certain way for an extension to make sense for him. And I exceedingly doubt that they would happen. Two more guys, Tyrese Haliburton and Aaron Nesmith, two heavy hitters who will become extension eligible on July 1st. As both of these veterans did, I don't know if I said that, they're not extension eligible until July 1st. Let's get to it to close out today's show. Welcome back in here to Locked On Pacers. Thanks for making us your first listen today and every day. For your second listen, check out Locked On Lakers. Hear how that team is going to dive into their hectic offseason around LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Here we're talking about contract extensions for the Pacers. And the last two guys we'll get to who will be extension eligible are rookie scale extension candidates, Tyrese Haliburton and Aaron Nesmith. I'm going to do a full show in June on the Tyrese Haliburton extension because it is potentially the only thing that matters to the Pacers this summer. They could get some new players. They could make some consequential trades. If they lock up Tyrese Haliburton on an extension, it's at least a B offseason at the worst, right? He's that important. Having him locked up is that important to their franchise. He is the face of the franchise. So digging into his extension stuff is interesting. Rookie scale extensions are fascinating. There's a rule change here that is sort of relevant, but not really. And that is that all rookie scale extensions can be 5 years now. It used to require a player to be named a designated rookie to get a 5-year extension. Now that's not the case. Any rookie can get it. But the escalators part of this is where this gets interesting. So we'll start with Haliburton and we'll get to Nesmith after. You probably just heard this escalator term, talking about Ja Morant a lot, and that's because rookie extensions are interesting because Tyrese Haliburton's only been in the NBA right now for 3 years. At the end of his rookie scale contract, that number will be 4. And so he is in a range of years of service where his maximum salary is 25% of the salary cap, right? If he gets something called the 30% rookie extension rule, which is a little, it's hard to explain. It's called something different than what a lot of people actually say it. The fifth year 30% max criteria. That is a clause that can be put in rookie scale extension contracts. And what that is if Haliburton, this would be negotiated, by the way, he could sign a max contract extension that is, you know, 5 added years and all the money in the world. It depends on what the salary cap lands at that season. So it's impossible to say what it actually would be. It's a lot of money. It's probably like $200 million. I could probably run the math while I'm talking. Either way, it's a lot of time. What will happen is, I think, like Ja Morant just had this, where his max could have gone up to 30% if he met certain criteria. Those criteria, the CBA allows it to be either making one of the All-NBA teams, being the MVP or being the defensive player of the year, and then your max can go over 25% as high as 30%. So for Tyrese Haliburton, his extension would not kick in until after his rookie scale deal ends, which is after this coming season, right? He's already under contract for 2024-25 at $5.8 million. But after that, his salary could jump up quite a bit if he makes All-NBA or if that's negotiated in, right? The Pacers' best-case scenario is 5 years, fully guaranteed, no options at the 25% max. And if Tyrese Haliburton took that, I don't think that would be very, very smart of him, but that would be fantastic for the Pacers because he would be worth more than his contract anyway. But the 5% cap difference is significant. The salary cap in 2024-25 is going to be almost $150 million. So the first year alone of Tyrese Haliburton's extension, you're looking at a difference of like $7.5 million between making All-NBA and not, if he gets escalators in his deal. So if you'll recall, Ja Morant had this clause in his rookie scale extension. If he made All-NBA this past season, his contract would have been worth 30% of the max this year. If he didn't, it'd be 25, and he didn't. So it's only going to be 25. That was significant for the Grizzlies and their finances and their team. Sucks for Ja Morant to not get that money, but I mean, he kind of dug his own grave in terms of that. For a guy like Haliburton, for his extension, he can get up to 5 years and up to the 25% max with those escalators involved. Now, unlike the other players where I would say, hey, don't just assume the largest parameters are what's going to happen. With Haliburton, I would say assume the largest parameters are what's going to happen. So if he gets 25% of the max, the highest I believe that the cap can be that year is just shy of $150 million. So the first year of Tyrese Haliburton's contract at a 25% max would be $37.4 million, which these numbers are just bananas. I mean, they're going to get so high so fast that I think people are going to kind of lose sight of what they actually are. But it can be a 5-year deal too. So this could be An exceedingly high number. I don't know why I forgot to do this before I actually sat down, but if he gets the 25% max on a 5-year extension, Tyrese Haliburton's final year of his deal would be almost $50 million, $49.3 million. The total contract would be 5 years, $217 million, kicking in 2024-25. And the Pacers should do that immediately. They should offer that the second he is eligible on July 1st. He's 100% worth every penny of that. He's the face of the franchise, the star of the team, sets everything in motion. I don't think there's anything to dispute. I'll do a more detailed dive on this again on a future episode, but that is what Tyrese Haliburton is eligible for easily. The thing is, he could get the escalators. And if he gets the escalators up to 30% max, which is the highest it could possibly be, and then he makes All-NBA, his contract would start at $44.8 million, and the final year is almost $60 million, and it would be a 5-year, $260 million deal. Again, these numbers sound huge now. They will sound routine at the time of these deals happening. So, of course, these are estimations based on what the salary cap will be in 2024-25. Tyrese Haliburton could want a player option on the fifth year of this. He could negotiate a different maximum salary. There's a lot of ways that this could actually go, but that is what he is staring at in terms of an extension. And if I'm the Pacers, the first day, the first thing I do the entire summer is go to Tyrese Haliburton and say, full 5 years guaranteed, no options. We'll do 25% max. We'll go up to 30% if you make All-NBA, because that means he's one of the best 15 players in the NBA, because the positions go away next year, remember. And if he's one of the best 15 players in the NBA, he's worth the max contract, right? So it's very easy for me to offer that if I'm the Pacers. I do everything I can to have no player options on the back. And if I'm Tyrese Haliburton, I want it. But we'll see. That is the parameters at stake for him and his season. We'll see where it goes. But that is the extension thing for him. And that is, I think, the most important thing for this Pacers offseason. Shout out to me for doing bad journalism and burying it this late in the show. But I'll do a full podcast on it. That's why I wanted to put it at the end. Aaron Nesmith is also eligible for the exact same contract. He obviously will not be getting that much money per year. But the new part of the rookie extensions is anyone can get the 5 years. So all the same numbers I just said for Haliburton, Nesmith can get them. He's not worth that much, and he won't get them, but he can get them. So for him, it's going to be about, does he actually want to do an extension, or would he like to bet on himself? Rookie scale extensions with players who are good but think they can be better are interesting, because the team wants to lock them up at it's a year early, right? Aaron Nesmith is signing an extension now that would kick in 24-25, and he'd have to play a full season in between. He could have the best season ever, and if he signs a cheap extension, his contract will look silly, right? So these are harder to negotiate. That's why I remember the Sabonis one was so awkward. He was saying, I know how the team feels about me now. And for a while, it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And it did, right? Because the team says, well, we want to be sure you're worth it. And a player says, well, I think I'm going to get better this year and be worth more than that. So it's really hard sometimes to find a happy medium. And usually these only happen. In fact, Nassir Little signed a cheap one last year. That was like the very rare exception to this. Usually these kind of rookie extensions for players only happen if the guy is worth well over the mid-level exception. Because if they're not, teams, that typically means a qualifying offer could be in play for them as like a legitimately fair salary, and other teams could actually make a restricted offer that makes sense. So it's very rare that a guy of Nesmith's talent level signs a rookie extension, just because it makes more sense for kind of role or players to bet on themselves. And if they have a great year, they're worth more. And if they don't have a great year, well, they're still a young developing player who's seen a high enough peak that their value doesn't typically drop too much. So these negotiations can get clunky. I would say Nesmith should be paid like a 10, 12, 14-ish million per year kind of range. That's just off the top of my head right now. But if you're him, you probably think, you know what, if I shoot 40% from three next year and defend like I just did, I'm going to be worth 20 million a year. Someone's going to think I'm the answer on the wing. So his could be hard. Again, the parameters are massive, just like Haliburton's, and we'll see where it shakes out. But of the players we talked about today, most likely to least likely extension, I would say Haliburton most likely, Hield second most likely, although very unlikely. Haliburton likely, Hield very unlikely, O'Shea Brissett and Aaron Nesmith exceedingly unlikely. Maybe I'll move Nesmith up a little bit. And then Tice and McConnell, like less than 1% chance. That's where I stand on it. Let me know if you disagree. Either tweet at me at Tony R. East or comment if you're watching down below on YouTube. Tomorrow we'll be talking Cam Whitmore, more draft prospect stuff. Sam Ferris from Draft Dummies will be joining us to do that. I know a lot of fans We like Kim Whitmore and what he could be for the Pacers. Thank you guys a ton for listening. Have a fantastic day. We will see you soon.